Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indie Radio, we are headed out into the woods. It's springtime after all, and that means it's the season for ramps, those wild lake-type plants that have started appearing on local restaurant menus. Ramps are one of the first wild plants to appear in the spring, and I'm headed out into the woods with local forager Summer Cooper to learn about them. Then we'll be continuing our focus on food this week when we talk with Jason Michael Thomas and Casey Kustas of Urban Awareness Gardens in Indianapolis about their urban farm, their classes and events, and, to tie it all together, their Indie Gourmet Club. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. So it's definitely springtime now in central Indiana, despite a recent cold snap. So today on Eat Drink Indie Radio, we are focused on getting out there and experiencing it, and bringing home a taste of spring as well. So we're foraging today. Well, actually we were out foraging last weekend with local foraging expert Summer Cooper. Now, she's out in the woods just about year-round, finding wild edible foods that are prized by local chefs, but this time of year she's focused on one thing. Ramps. Yes, it's ramp season, and foragers, chefs, and home cooks are excited about these first wild green plants of spring. So Summer let me tag along with her recently in the woods of Putnam County as she worked to harvest the abundant ramps that were growing wild across the hillside. As we walk through the woods, Summer tells us what she's looking for and how she goes about the business of foraging.
I'm foraging for ramps today out in a friend's woods. What I'm looking for is the more mature plants. They have about a 7-year growth cycle for these plants. So the smaller plants can be quite small. You want to give them time to get up to reproductive age. So you'll go into a patch and you'll look for the more mature plants. You'll use a knife and you'll use the tip to go right into the soil underneath. And the goal is to get about half the bulb to 2/3 of the bulb with the leaf and stem and leave the root in place with just a portion of the bulb for energy to come back next year. Since they do have a slower growth cycle and I forage commercially, I cut them out rather than dig them. That leaves the patches basically unaffected the next year. They will look exactly the same as when I came in.
Now that's important, right? Because you want to be able to do this year after year.
Absolutely. And other people use this woods for mushroom hunting and, you know, recreation and hunting. And you don't want your woods to look like it's been raped after you leave. You want someone else to be able to come in and enjoy the same ecosystem that you came into.
So are there usually a lot together like this in a clump?
They do generally grow out from clumps once they're up to reproductive age. They also will reproduce by splitting bulbs, not just from seed. So if you look at the circular growth pattern, this probably started as one plant, split, 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 split. And then that's how you can tell a mature clump usually from like an immature. These will end up in clumps eventually.
Now, what is it about ramps that get people so excited?
I don't know. I love them and I don't understand it. But the more I know about the plant and its growth cycle and how it reproduces, the more fascinating. I guess that is the thing about intimacy, isn't it? Like the more intimate you become with something, the more usually you're fascinated by it. You like notice the small details of it. It might just be that it's the first huge pop of green that comes on in the spring after a long winter. It's so nice to like look out here and see some green. That might be part of it. Probably a lot of different factors and the fact that they're delicious.
Well, now, that's a question. Do you like them too?
I do. Oh my gosh. I eat them all season long. I feel like that's probably what gets me through the season. I'm going to go home and have some rams and then come back tomorrow and keep going.
Tell me about foraging and why you do it.
Why I forage? Oh, I love it. I can't, like, not do it. I don't. It's, yeah, I come back for it every year.
What's the appeal?
I'm a pretty big loner, so the ability to work by myself is one of them for sure. I love being in the woods. It feels like a treasure hunt a lot of times, especially when you're mushroom hunting. And I like the challenge of organizing my own harvest, setting my own schedule. I love the relationships I have with the people I work with. I mean, that keeps me coming back always. Like, the people, the food people in Indianapolis have been amazing to me. Like, they really have. And it's like, I have a little bit of tears in my eyes. Like, it's so touching that they are really amazing. Everybody, I love them. I love the opportunity to work with them. I really do.
How do you become well known for foraging? I mean, did you start by just doing it and taking your stuff to people? How did it start?
I started as a farmer. My original career path was in CSA management, community supported agriculture. So basically I was a harvesting manager in my early 20s, and which is very helpful with this. Like, I manage my own harvest and do all of my own harvesting. So I just took that experience from here. I did start my own farm, and I found I didn't enjoy, and I wasn't also good at the cultivation side of things. It wasn't my passion. I wanted to be in the woods all the time. I started foraging at the same time I started farming, and I found it to be a better payoff, honestly, too, just as personally, and I felt sometimes that my foraging money was going back into the farm. That was not making me any money. So I decided to do what I'm good at and try to pursue it.
And it worked?
Yeah. Well, I can't say 100%. I'm not quite to making a living yet, but it is a good chunk of my earnings and my income, and it's becoming better each year. So, I mean, I'm hopeful. I really am that I'll be able to make a living at this one day.
So, have you noticed a growing interest in people wanting more foraged items? I mean, did it start? Can you pinpoint maybe when it started?
It had already started when I came in. I had actually, the reason I became interested was I was serving at a restaurant, and one of my friends that I served with, her parents came in and said, "Oh, do you know chefs are starting to use weeds?" And I was like, "Oh, I wonder what kind of weeds you can eat." And so I just bought a book online, and since I already had the market there, I was already working with restaurants and things, growing food and at the farmers markets, I got made fun of so much when I would bring wild food and I started farming. Like, the other farmers would walk by my table and be like, "Mulberries? You're selling mulberries?" And I'm like, so embarrassed, standing there like, "Yes, I can't help it." But it became, people got really interested in it.
Well, there must have been some interest, right?
Yeah, I think there's always a little bit of like, "You're doing this country bumpkin thing right out here in public." But, you know, it comes and goes.
But people must have liked it.
Yes, yeah? Absolutely.
And I'm sure that the chefs were very into it, because that seems to be, you know, something, you know, they're always interested in something new and interesting and flavorful and local and all that kind of combined.
And, you know, they work insane hours. I feel like when I bring something out of the woods, it's almost their way to get to touch nature and be close to nature, even though they have to be inside working their job 80 hours a week. Like, I'm bringing the forest to them, and they get to share this experience with me. I think that's another aspect of why it's so special, that relationship between, like, a chef and a forager, a chef and a farmer. You are taking nature into them, and so they can kind of get that experience with you.
And then share it with the dining public, too.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole forest to fork concept. Absolutely.
We're talking today with local forager Summer Cooper. Stay with us for more from Summer as we talk about ramp season and other edible wild plants here on WFYI and WFYI.org. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and we are back here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, talking and foraging with Summer Cooper, whose business is foraging wild foods for local restaurants. And what those restaurants want right now are ramps, also known as wild leeks. As we walk through the woods surrounded by patches of ramps, Summer tells us just what they are, how long the season will last, and the hard work that goes into harvesting them. Now, how long is the ramp season?
You know, it's not that long. It's probably about, I feel like it's about 6 weeks. Once it starts getting hot, they will die off. They will turn yellow, lay against the ground. They completely die off. You would not even know there were ramps here after June or so. And then I think in like August or September, that's when the flower shoots up. Like after the leaves have been gone for a while. It's so strange. So you'll go back to your patches and find the seed heads. And then I think late September, early October is when you can harvest the seed. And a lot of people actually take those seed heads before they're mature too. And they'll like pickle them and stuff like that. And do like the little flower bucket.
Oh, like dill. Like you might see dill.
Absolutely. Or it's almost like a ramp caper. I think that's what they're calling them.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. I have not gotten to them at that stage yet though, just for the record. It's not my idea. It wasn't my thing. I don't remember who it was, but it's pretty cool.
So now our chefs and restaurateurs, you know, the people that are looking for your foraged stuff, are they looking for a particular like size or type of ramp? Are there different varieties that are out here?
There are. There are two different types of varieties, I believe. This is, what is it, trichotum, I think. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And then there's another one that starts with a U. And that will actually have a white stem instead of the pink stem. And we do find them in Indiana a little bit. But this pink stem one is by far the more pervasive variety.
Now, when you cook them, what do you personally do with them?
I use leaves and I scramble them in eggs a lot. I put them in soups.
Now, in case people don't really know what a ramp is, how do you describe it? What's the taste like?
It's a very light garlicky onion flavor. I would compare it most closely with a shallot, but I would say even a little more mild than that. The greens have almost like a spinach texture, so I would use them in the place of like a spinach where you want that garlic, oniony flavor, and also soups. They're so good in soups. I like puree soups with them, and like a potato leek, replace the leek with the ramp because this is basically a wild leek. That's really good as well.
So that's really the type of plant we're talking about, a wild leek, right?
Yeah. It's called wild garlic a lot, but I would firmly say it's closer to a leek.
So if these are some of the first foraged items of spring, what other things come along?
Right now, if you want to be right out in the first, I don't even know the word I'm looking for, but you see violets right there, the little purple flowers, those are edible. Those are out right now. Woodier mushrooms are out right now. Scarlet elf cup mushrooms are out right now. Dryad saddle mushrooms are out right now, which are all the earliest mushrooms that you'll start with. You'll see some spring beauty coming through here too.
What's that?
Right here. These are spring beauty flowers. The flowers are edible, but you can dig those little roots and it tastes like a combination of new potatoes and chestnuts. They are so delicious, but they are so time consuming to dig because the root is like super small, probably the size of your thumbnail. They are so good though. If you boil them down, you can eat them just like that.
Wow.
These are cleavers. You probably have them cling to your clothes before walking through. These are edible as well. These are so good for you. I think people feed them to their chickens a lot to up the iron content maybe in the egg. That might be me stretching it. But I like to throw these in my smoothies in the spring, like a morning smoothie with fruit and stuff. Delicious. Really light green flavor. Not too like invasive or anything. There's also Virginia waterleaf out here somewhere, and I'll point it out as we pass it. That's edible and pretty good. It's got almost a little bit of kick to it. I've heard, and I agree, that each plant is its own skill. So once you get one down, you can consider that like a skill that you have, rather than looking at foraging just as a skill set. You look at each plant, learning about it as a skill.
Oh, like an individual skill. Like I could become familiar with morel hunting, and that would be my foraging skill.
Yeah,
and but that's different from ramps or other types of mushrooms.
Absolutely, yeah. They all have different seasons, different types of trees they'll be associated with, different weather they like. Yeah, you have to get to learn each one individually and what it likes and what tree it associates with and when to look. And watching a lot of other foragers, I find social media extremely helpful for kind of filling out what's in season and all of that. Because if you follow a lot of other foragers, you have a lot of knowledge to pull from.
And that's sort of interesting, you know, such a of the moment modern thing like social media with something that's more of an old fashioned skill like foraging.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of those old fashioned skills are coming online, and we're starting to maybe promote and admire those skills that are close to the land again. You know, all the TV shows they're making. And well, I don't watch a lot of TV, so I don't know a lot of them, but I know they make them. Is it like fishing and survival and stuff like that? It's bringing more attention to what people go through, I guess, on one aspect, just to get your food to you.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, this is kind of hard work that you're doing. You're down on your knees, and it's a little chilly out, and you know, you're working with your hands, so it's not particularly easy.
No, it's not, but it's not terrible work either. This is actually walking and carrying mushrooms out of the woods is physically taxing too, but I would say this is my most physically taxing tasks that I do throughout the year.
Is the ramp harvesting the ramps?
The ramp harvest, yeah, for sure. I put in a lot of mileage when I'm mushroom hunting, but carrying it out is not quite as much as the ramp. Yeah, the ramp season is definitely the most physically taxing. But I mean, it keeps me in good shape. It keeps me active, so I'm not going to complain. I don't ever have to go to the gym.
We're talking with local forager Summer Cooper about ramps and other wild edible plants. Stay with us for more as we talk about what's growing in your own backyard here on WFYI and WFYI.org. It's ramp season here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, and today we're talking with forager Summer Cooper. I tagged along with her last week as she was out in the woods harvesting bags of ramps, all destined for restaurants. These wild leeks have become one of the most popular harbingers of spring, and dishes featuring them will be appearing on restaurant menus for as long as the season lasts, which really isn't very long. Summer tells us where her ramps are headed, what she'll be looking for next, and what you can find growing in your own backyard. So I guess another question is this, how worthwhile is this? Do ramps bring a good price? You know, are chefs, you know, willing to pay a good price to make this worth your while?
Yes, actually, ramps is when I make a decent amount of money that kind of sustains me through the months that aren't so good for me. I would say personally, my big seasons are chanterelles and ramps. That happens to be what I am good at, what I feel a passion for, and what's close to me. I'm sure each forager is different as far as what their income comes from, or a big portion of their income. I think ramps will always command a higher price just because of their slow growth cycle and their short season. I think that will always, just like ginseng, will always command a high price because of its growth cycle and everything. I think ramps will be the same way, especially if we keep emphasizing that growth cycle and the season and educating people about the plant, how it grows and how it does, I think. And we are having extremely educated consumers. It is, foragers are, Indianapolis foragers are working really hard to keep everybody educated about what goes into their food and how it grows and all of this. I feel like we have a very, very educated, knowledgeable customer base, for sure.
Now, has it been a good, I mean, we had such a mild winter. Has this been a good season so far? And do you think it's going to turn out to be a pretty good one later on?
I think it's going to end up being a really, really good season. It seems like I've watched the demand for ramps go up over the last couple of years, for sure. And I've gotten a good start this year. I got started on time, so that's a bonus. They can, once they shoot up out of the ground, they grow extremely fast. So if you're seeing them shoot up, you want to be checking them every couple of days before you start your harvest, rather than come back in a week or two. I learned that lesson the hard way a couple of years ago. So yeah, it's looking like it's going to be an awesome season.
So tell me where these ramps are destined for.
These were actually going to the Chicago market. It looks like Indianapolis is going to start feeding more wild foods probably into Chicago. It seems like new foragers come online in Indianapolis every year. It's kind of cool to watch. It's like we're starting to do stuff together. It's really cool. And Josh Horgan, I don't know if you know who he is, of Annabelle's Garden, he's so good at sales. So like he'll go out and do a huge sale and then pull in a bunch of foragers to pick the order and move it up there. It's becoming something. It's fun to watch. It's really cool.
I think it's great, you know, when it's cool when Chicago chefs realize, you know, the bounty of what is here, you know, growing right here in Indiana, not very far away from Chicago.
Oh, not far at all. I think it has been a little bit of Indiana feeding Chicago all along, but more underground, and I think it's going to become more obvious that Indiana feeds into Chicago a lot, for sure.
So what will you look for next? What's the next thing on your foraging calendar?
Morels, even though I'm not good at them, and even though it's very frustrating every year, I keep trying. I'm thinking I'm going to get really good one of these days.
So what do you look for? When do you know it's morel time?
Well, we were just discussing this, actually, but the May apples come up. And actually, I kind of know towards the end of my ramp season, once those leaves start dying down, the morel season should be in full swing usually. So I will maximize my ramp season before I start hunting morels because I know where they are. I know I'm going to bring them in and I know I can sell them. With the morels, it's kind of, I'm going out just being hopeful.
You do. You kind of have to be hopeful. And I find them very hard to spot until you spot one.
Yeah. And then they're all over the place and you can see them all of a sudden. But, you know, if you're out and you're not finding and not finding and not finding, you have no faith.
Do you, you know, guard your morel locations, you know, keep it very secret?
I'm pretty secretive about all of my spots. I'm just that type, I guess.
Well, you know, people like to.
I'm not going to say I have a good reason. I'm just that type.
Well, you know, people like to be able to go back to their special places, yeah. You know, to find some of these things.
Well, once you have a, repertoire of spots, you're almost guaranteed a harvest. Like you're going and checking spots rather than hunting. And so once you've been foraging for a number of years, you're more spot checking and at the right times than actual hunting. I would say it turns from hunting to harvesting at some point,
which I guess is where you want to get to, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is exciting to go out and just do a straight harvest, but I still really, really enjoy the hunt as well. And I'm probably not to the place where I need to be as far as having a huge repertoire of spots. So it's still necessary for me to do some hunting. And I like it.
Any advice for people as far as foraging or things that are easy to find, maybe?
Easy to find? Oh, yeah. There's tons of stuff in your backyard that you can eat. As far as, like, dandelions, the whole entire plant is edible, from the flower to the bud to the root. A lot of people will roast that root they're really easy to pull up after a nice rain. I know it's a pain to harvest them otherwise, but if you get out when the ground's really soft and it's just rained, you can pull them straight out. People harvest the root and use it for medicinal purposes or just grind it and kind of use it as a coffee substitute. It does not have caffeine, but the taste is kind of there. It's kind of the idea of like a chicory almost. The buds are so good if you like saute them. You can like bread them and fry them. It's almost like an artichoke. It's so good.
Like before they've bloomed?
Yeah, the dandelions before the flower opens, just grab that bud and toss it in some like a flour egg wash and fry it. It's delicious. It's something I really like.
I'm definitely going to try that because I've had, of course, dandelion greens, and I've a recipe for dandelion jelly, but I've never thought of doing anything with the buds, so now I'm going to have to do that.
That is, yeah, my favorite way to do it. We used to eat the flowers fried like that as a child, but I find the buds are just a little bit better than the flower, actually.
You know, any other advice? You know, the ramps are pretty easy to spot this time of year out in the woods, but anything closer, you know, closer to home?
Actually, from a distance, you're probably not going to know if you're looking at a bluebell patch that's not budded or flowered yet or ramps. If you're just driving by a woods and looking in, and the greens can look very similar, and the bluebells are actually edible as well.
What do you do with those?
I've never done anything with them, but I just found out that last year. Let's see, what else is edible that would be in your yard at this time? Oh, the purple dead nettle. They have a square stem, and you pass by the field and you just see this low area of purple. Those are in the mint family and they're edible. They have a very, very strong earthy taste, but I do like it. A lot of times during the spring, I will just take a big grouping of a bunch of different wild greens and make a vodka sauce out of it and just put the wild greens in that and serve it over gnocchi for like days at a time and just eat on that for almost a week. And that's what sustains me during the spring. I really like eating that way. The trillium is actually edible as well out here. The little three-leaved early plants you'll see. They don't have much taste, though. I don't usually mess with them. Also, I believe they have a pretty slow life cycle. So the combination of not, like, a super desirable taste and the slow life cycle make them not super desirable for hunting. There are so many wild edible plants everywhere. I mean, anywhere you have wild space, you will probably find wild food. Literally.
We've been talking with local forager Summer Cooper. You can follow her on Instagram at The Essential Forager and look for Essential Forager videos on YouTube. Keeping with our springtime theme here today on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, we're also talking about urban farming, specifically about Urban Awareness Gardens in Indianapolis, or Urban Ag Indy. And we're talking with Jason Michael Thomas and pastry chef and gardener Casey Kustas. Jason and Casey tell us how they started their half-acre garden right in the middle of the city, what the reaction was, what they'll be growing, and what's ended up on restaurant menus. Tell me a little bit about Urban Awareness Gardens.
We started Urban Awareness Gardens, which we call Urban Ag Indy, so the awareness gardens ties into the ag.
I get it.
We started it a few years ago because, for a few reasons, we really enjoy fresh produce and food, and we wanted to be a part of the change we wanted to see in the world. Basically, trying to make the world more sustainable, mm-hmm. and started growing things, and it was started very small.
Now, where were you growing? Is it right in the city?
It is, yes. It's just north of 16th and Central. So I have a property there, and we've got a house with a half an acre. And, yeah, it's been a real growing experience.
So it is right in the middle of the city.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So what's it... What was it like getting started? I mean, did your neighbors sort of, you know, look at you funny and wonder what you were doing over the fence and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think there's been growing interest. I think people really didn't know. And there are apartments to the south of us. So we get a new crew every year or two. You know, people move in and out and whatnot. And then they see us tilling and growing things like, this is great. They see our hens over the fence. You know, we've got a couple chicken coops back there. But yeah, everybody, I think, really enjoys the fact that they got some farmers next door. It's kind of interesting.
That's nice. Now, Dayspring Community Center is very close to you, right? You know, so they sometimes have a garden out there. So there have been, you know, gardens in the neighborhood.
That's true. Just a little bit south of us, I think, right?
Right.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So it's something that is continuing to grow, pun intended, right? Continuing to grow. We're seeing more and more of that. So what do you grow in, and I don't want to say a backyard garden because it sounds like it's bigger than a backyard garden.
Yeah, I think once you get over, you know, a quarter acre, it starts to become an urban farm.
Right.
But yeah, we're at about a half acre, and actually we've got a couple other lots around town too that we're growing on. But really, we grow a lot of stuff. Let's see. I think our first real seller that we really enjoy growing is tomatoes.
And oh, my goodness.
We have at least 30 kinds of tomatoes. So
That's a lot of tomatoes.
Yeah. There are pictures of all this stuff. You can check my Instagram, Jason Michael Thomas, or Facebook, Jason Michael Thomas. And we've also got other things. The Facebook site for Urban Awareness Gardens Indianapolis mm-hmm. has a lot of pictures as well. But, I mean, to talk about them is one thing, but to see the numbers and the beautiful colors, it's the full rainbow of tomatoes.
Now, these are heirloom varieties, I'm guessing, right?
Absolutely, yes. And so Casey here is she's really our seed genius. She buys the coolest seeds. When the catalogs come in, she is so excited, and she just flips through and just finds all the coolest stuff.
Now, this is Casey Kustos. So you're a gardener, right?
Yes. Yes, I garden.
So tell me.
Yes, I garden.
tell me just a little bit about what you might be getting started on right now. Is it too early, or are you out there getting things going?
I have a couple of things that are outdoors right now. They are cold weather crops, and they are kind of an experiment because it has been a little bit chilly for them. I might have to cover them tonight, mm-hmm. for example, because it is going to get down pretty low. But most of the work's happening indoors still. Our tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, crops like that needed to be started a couple of weeks ago to get a head start on the growing season.
Sure.
So we got a lot of indoor lights, a lot of stuff growing in there. They're probably an inch to 2 inches tall now. Very cute still, very small.
But this is one of the problems that people make, I think, one of the mistakes they make. They try to put these things out too early, and we get a few nice warm spring days, and there they are wanting to, like, plant tomatoes or something, and it's just too early yet, right?
Right. They really don't like it when it's this cold. Usually you aim to plant things like that outside, and the last frost date, which around here is typically May 8th, so no earlier than that. You can if you're willing to chance it and cover them up and do extra work, but it's usually not worth it.
Now, what else comes on? You know, what else are you going to be planting later on as the season goes on?
We will have squash. We will be doing melons this year. We're going to have a lot more herbs than we have in the past, probably 10 different kinds of herbs going on. Marigolds, you know, those flowers that keep pests out of your garden. Mm-hmm. They just don't like the smell, so they're good to have around, and they're also beautiful. carrots, beets. We're going to have lettuce, a little bit of everything.
So this is a big operation. It sounds like it has well, really expanded over the
blossomed.
Years. So it's really blossomed. So tell me how you started it and when and how it grew.
I have to be honest and say I don't remember how many years ago it was.
Oh, no.
Let's say.
That's okay.
You know, it's just one of those things. It was probably 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
We just started growing things that we loved, and it was very small, right? So then we had these amazing tomatoes, and, you know, local restaurants were interested. I think the first people we provided some to were Shoe Fly.
Uh-huh. In the neighborhood, right?
Correct, yes. Keeping it very local. And then Tinker Street showed up on the scene.
Right.
And Braden really enjoys some of the things we find.
Chef Braden Kellner at Tinker Street.
Correct.
Right?
He likes some of the off-the-beaten-path things that we provide.
And like what?
Well, last year we had radish pods, and I don't think anyone even knew what they were.
Well, I'm going to say that I don't know what they are.
Most people don't.
So tell me.
So Basically, if you let your radishes go to seed, meaning, you know, the radish that you see is just kind of the
tuber. Yeah, so they shoot up a little flower,
yeah,
right?
And they shoot up pretty tall, actually, you know, 2 to 3 feet. And then they have flowers on the end, and then they have little pods that kind of look like soybeans.
Okay.
And, you know, most people pick them before that because they want to eat their radishes.
Of course.
So, you know, I saw these things growing on the ends of my radishes, and I was like, those look really edible. So I did a Google search.
Right,
you know, it's
right.
Not like I knew this stuff. You know, you're just, you know, every day learning something, and that's the beauty of it. But I looked it up, and I found that in, you know, some countries, they pickle them and use them in dishes. And so I took a few over to Braden. I said, Braden, this is pretty interesting. And he's like, whoa.
Yeah, so you're appealing to a chef, you know,
something is
new and interesting.
Oh, yeah. So he really loved it. He pickled them, and they were on their beet salad all summer.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so if you had the beet salad, you ate some of our radish pots.
Oh, that's great. We've been talking with Jason Michael Thomas and Casey Kustos of Urban Awareness Gardens and Indie Gourmet Club. Stay with us for more from Jason and Casey here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We are all about spring today here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, and we've been talking about what's happening at Urban Awareness Gardens in Indianapolis, or Urban Ag Indy, an urban farm that's run by Jason Michael Thomas and Casey Kustos. As part of the farm's mission, they'll be offering classes as well as farm-to-table dinners. Jason and Casey tell us about what's on the schedule and how it all ties in with growing, making, and sharing local food.
Our plan right now, aside from, you know, some of the foraging that I'm doing and taking ramps around and things like that and edible flowers to various restaurants at this point, once we get in full swing this year, we're going to be doing the urban ag classes, teaching people. We already did one seed starting class, which was just a few weeks ago, and had a wonderful event with some really charming people. It was really fun. So we planted a bunch of seeds and put the lids on these little containers, and everybody's like, "Oh, I've got stuff growing now." So our next
fun. So you're gonna have more classes?
Absolutely. So our next class is May 6th, and it's Organic Solutions to Garden Problems, I should say. Organic Solutions to Garden Problems.
All right, so you would talk about dealing with pests or various other things organically, I imagine.
Absolutely. I think Casey should talk about this.
Well,
she's definitely the pest control expert.
Well, tell me a little bit about what the class might cover. You know, and what people can expect out of a class like that.
I think we haven't talked about the class yet, but I think a good way to approach it would be to talk about specific pests for specific plants, and then to speak about, you know, a way to get rid of them that is not the chemicals, is not, you know, going to be bad for your health, bad for the environment, you know, bad for your garden in the long run. Because as long as you're treating everything with chemicals, you're not keeping your soil healthy. And so
you have to
keep adding the chemicals to make it work. And there's an organic way to take care of all of that.
And I assume there are organic ways to amend the soil as well, you know,
yes.
For people who have, you know, kind of clay-heavy backyard soil, right?
It's a good mix of green and a good mix of the dry brown things. So your leaves, your straw, these are the brown components, and then your organic sort of green leftovers from vegetable peelings, things like that, that you put in, the living and the already sort of dry.
Now, I bet there are also some concerns about just what is best to grow, you know, and what people can expect to grow organically. I mean, are there any limitations on what they can do?
There are seasonal limitations. There is a USDA zone. I think we are in 6A or something like that here. But that will determine kind of how long your growing season is and what is possible for you without artificial means. If you wanted to take it inside and have kind of an operation or have a greenhouse, you can kind of extend that and change it a little bit. But there is sort of a limitation where you live.
Where, you know, what's feasible to do.
Right.
So the class might cover all sorts of things like that. So what are some of the specifics about the class? You know, where it would be and, you know, how much it might cost, that kind of stuff?
I think we're working on a location. We did our last one at the Spades Park Library. Mm-hmm. So I asked them if they'd be interested in having us again. Yeah, they were launching their seed library. So you literally could go to the library, get seeds, and then come to our seed starting class. So
that's very cool. Yeah. Like checking out seeds, only you get to keep them, right?
Exactly. And then you get to eat them, and then you can bring seeds back to share again. I mean, it's a really beautiful thing. The things for the organic solutions to garden problems. I mean, the things that we've encountered over the years that we've had to figure out. I mean, there's all kinds of insects that attack. Casey has had a number of issues with her eggplant, and like she put these beautiful little eggplants out. I mean, she had probably 20 of them last year. And what bug was that, by the way? Do you remember?
It's a little bug. It looks like a flea. It's called a flea beetle.
Oh, a little bitty thing that can really, you know, do a number on your eggplants.
So she figured out that the easiest way to deal with that was to use diatomaceous earth, which is basically crushed oyster shells.
Oh,
and
sure.
And so what did you do again?
Tell me about it. Why does that work?
It works on a lot of different pests. And one thing that it does is on anything with kind of a softer underbelly or underbody, to us, looks like powder. It almost feels like cornstarch. But to them, each little tiny piece of it is very, very sharp. So it's a little graphic, I guess. But it sort of kind of cuts them. It cuts them and dehydrates them.
Okay, so I have heard that ashes, it does something similar to slugs.
Right.
You know, so sometimes I don't know if it has helped keep the slugs out of my garden, but I have done that, you know, put some ashes around there.
Sure.
So it's something like that, things that aren't going to hurt anything.
It's something you could digest, you could ingest, and it would not hurt you. Obviously you could wash it off, but if you did happen to get some, you'd
right,
be fine.
It's not gonna, or pets or something like that, because
right.
that is a big concern as well.
Sure.
So what is there some advice for backyard gardeners who are thinking right now, you know, about, you know, wanting to get out there and, you know, get planting? Are there things that can go out now? I mean, that aren't going to get, you know, nipped by the weather. That's my problem, is I get very excited and I go to the
right.
garden store and I see all those wonderful things and I want them, and then maybe it's just too early.
I am really hoping that this is our last little cold snap here. I said that last time too, and I'm always wrong, but so hopefully this is the last one. But I think now you could be reasonably safe planting out carrots, beets, radishes. You could do some lettuce right now.
Mm-hmm.
Probably peas would probably do all right.
There's some actual things that I can really get going on.
Oh, I totally, yeah, definitely.
Okay, all right, well, that's very encouraging. Now, if you don't sell a lot of the produce, I am guessing that you do a lot of cooking with the produce. So tell me just a little bit about your interests in that area.
Well, Casey is actually a pastry chef. And I don't think she mentioned all the berry plants that we have. We have incredible amounts of berry plants. I think she planted over 200 strawberry plants.
Oh, my gosh.
Four blueberry bushes, raspberries. We have over 30 fruit trees now.
In the city?
Yeah. In our little half acre, we've got, many mulberry trees. And, you know, we've given some to Shoe Fly for their mulberry pie, which was incredible.
Goodness.
That was like I told Craig Mariuto. I said, Craig, please make that pie again. That was like the best mulberry pie I've ever had. And this is, you know, my pastry chef girlfriend is right here. But she knew it was good, too.
That's
it was
right.
Delicious. So,
So things like that certainly end up in the kitchen.
Oh, absolutely. So we've been growing year after year. And our current plan is to give instructional culinary farm-to-table tours.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so basically the farm, we want to really go farm-to-table. I'm trying to think of someone in Indianapolis who's doing that, and I can't quite think of it. Maybe you know somebody.
Like a farm right there at the farm.
Correct. So our idea is to take the food out of the garden, bring it inside, and teach people how to cook with these ingredients. So, and that will literally be farm to table.
Absolutely farm to table.
So that is our plan currently. And, you know, if you follow us on social media, you know that I cook a lot as well. And we just love to make delicious food. And that's really part of our desire to, as I said before, be a part of the change, is showing people what they could do. So we're teaching classes on agriculture, and we're growing food, and we're teaching people how to make incredible meals with it so that they're inspired. I don't see any urban farmer in town as competition. I see the urban farmers as a network of amazing people who are doing something that needs to be done. And, you know, it's just, for me, it's part of what we want to do. So teaching those classes is a way to sell the idea of sustainability. And by feeding people and bringing together friends and meeting new people and drinking some wine or some whatever else, it's a very... maybe I would say, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, you're certainly building community around the food and agriculture and learning too, which is that's pretty awesome.
Well, thank you. we're very passionate about it.
We've been talking with Jason Michael Thomas and Casey Kustos of Urban Awareness Gardens in Indianapolis. We'll be right back with more from Jason and Casey about their Indie Gourmet Club here on WFYI and WFYI.org. We've talked a lot today here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio about growing food, but we also want to talk about the fun of eating and sharing good food, too. And that's where Indie Gourmet Club comes in. Jason Michael Thomas and Casey Kustos started this Facebook group to share pop-up dinners and information, and now it's expanding to larger events. Jason and Casey tell us about their recent Cheese Wars event and about the upcoming Barbecue Wars as well. Well, let's talk a little bit about Indie Gourmet Club. And so tell me a little bit about how that got started.
Indie Gourmet Club, I remember we were sitting in the backyard of our friend's house. I had been thinking about this idea for a while. And literally, we're out in the backyard with Ben Hardy,
pastry chef.
Very good friend, pastry chef that uh-huh. Casey's known forever, and his girlfriend, Allison. And they own and run the Gallery Pastry Shop. Very mm-hmm. good friends. And L'Oreal was there, L'Oreal Gavin.
Oh, people that we've talked to, all of those people on the program here before.
Right. So it's a very small world, isn't it? So we've got a really active food community. So, and I was just saying, you know, I really want to do this, you know, Indie Gourmet Club, and I want to do food events. And, you know, it started off as maybe just a couple pop-ups, and we just did a few dinners here and there. And basically since, you know, last year we hadn't done much, but I've been, you know, still posting online and posting food pictures and things. And people have been asking, when are you going to do another meal or something like that? And, I've just kind of been waiting for the right moment. So,
So is this the right moment?
Oh, absolutely. This is when it hits right now.
As a matter of fact, I think you had a moment a week or so ago with a big event.
Yes, we had a really wonderful time with that.
So tell me about it was Cheese Wars?
It was. And so Luke Trinowski, mm-hmm. he posted this picture of some like ridiculous cheese dish. I mean, Luke is awesome. He puts out some really good food, as he proved at Cheese Wars, because he won one of the categories, judges vote. Basically, he had this cheesy thing that looked so good, and I was like, oh my gosh, Luke, that looks so good. And he said, I don't know, he's just, you know, usual Luke, he's funny and always has something good to say. And then I said, man, we got to do Cheese Wars. And I put it right there, and I was like, it came to me, and I was excited about it. And then, you know, I started talking about it. I was thinking about doing the event where I run this little cultural center at Broadway United Methodist Church. And I was talking to them about it, and I thought we were going to do it there.
Uh-huh.
But then we found out no wine or beer. So
well,
it could be done. It could be
right.
done. But then I was like, well, cheese without wine? I don't know.
All right. So the Gallery Pastry Shop seemed to be a good alternative?
Absolutely. So I just approached my good friends, and they said, heck yeah. You know, so we put it together, and they were a huge help. Ben and Al, I mean, our networks combined are pretty good for throwing an event like that.
So how many chefs did you have?
We had 10 chefs.
And they each did a dish?
Everybody did a dish. It was, we had four pastry chefs, We had six, you know, other culinary savory chefs. And there was just such an incredible variety. Nobody really talked about what they were going to do. We had a little bit of a thing where we found out two chefs were doing the same thing. So Casey kindly offered to change her dish.
So you had a good first event for this go around, but do you have some other things in mind?
Absolutely, yeah. The event was sold out. Really fun, and we're looking forward to Barbecue Wars.
Oh my goodness!
June 25th.
Oh, so you have a date, everything. So,
yes.
So that's very fun.
Yeah.
So, what could people expect out of Barbecue Wars?
I think we'll probably stick to 10 chefs, but we're not sure yet. I'm going to be meeting with Ben and Elle tonight. Actually, we are going to be meeting with Ben and Elle tonight. So, we're going to try to talk about the details on that. We might choose to do it at a different location, mm-hmm. although the gallery will definitely be our partners on that. But a different location would allow the gallery to still do their brunch.
Oh, no, they've been doing brunch. That's exactly right.
And maybe do a bigger event somewhere. So I'm interested in talking about that.
We've been talking with Jason Michael Thomas and Casey Kustos of Urban Awareness Gardens and Indie Gourmet Club. Look for information on both on Facebook or follow Jason on Instagram. I'm Jolene Katzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thank you so much for tuning in to our wild food and urban farming show this week. And thanks also to our guests, local forager Summer Cooper and Jason Michael Thomas and pastry chef and gardener Casey Kustos of Urban Awareness Gardens and Indie Gourmet Club in Indianapolis. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio. Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie.